The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Bold predictions week here on Fantasy Football Today. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have bold predictions from four different analysts. And here's one from me. Julio Jones gets traded Wednesday. That will be tomorrow. He gets traded to the Titans. For two second round picks. One next year. Okay. There you go, guys. Breaking news.
I think Falcons will take that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it would rain just a little bit on the AJ Brown top three wide receiver parade. But man, where do we rank Ryan Tannehill if he's got Julio Jones and AJ Brown he's throwing to? He can't be more efficient
than Anthony Firkser.
Mm-hmm. And Anthony Firkser. Don't forget about him.
Tannehill would probably be 10.
It would be a lot of fun. It would. And we will have, if there's breaking news on Julio Jones, you can bet your bottom dollar we will be podcasting on it. Well, I hope everybody had a great holiday weekend.
Like what's the level of breaking news podcast we're going to do? Like Jameson Crowder cut. Is that an emergency pod?
No.
What about Zach Ertz traded?
Yeah.
What if Jameson Crowder's traded?
Maybe.
For Zach Ertz. Actually would make some sense.
Yes, Zach Ertz gets a podcast. Crowder only gets a podcast if he goes to somewhere where it's like really interesting. And who cares? Let's talk about bold predictions. We've got some news to get to first, and then we'll get into some kind of rumor mill items, like not a rumor so much, but just, you know, kind of soft news. Joe Burrow working on his deep ball accuracy, and the Saints could be more run heavy to start the season, and Washington, yes, they're going to throw the ball downfield more, but they want Antonio Gibson running more passing routes, so we'll talk about those types of things. Before we get to Jamie's bold predictions, today Jamie's bold predictions, tomorrow Heath's, then Dave's, then Chris's. Let's talk about Julio Jones. So Seattle is discussing, I don't know if we have to talk much about it, but because we will react to the actual news, but Seattle is in talks to acquire, well, they're discussing it. They're discussing acquiring Julio Jones. That's pretty vague, but okay, let's say he goes there. Metcalf or Julio, who would you rather have?
Metcalf.
Yeah, I probably would. See, the problem for me is I still really haven't separated Metcalf and Lockett, at least in PPR rankings, because I would expect Lockett to catch a lot more passes. They're very, very close to each other. So you can't have three top 20 wide receivers on the same team.
You can. I think.
And Julio is more of a DK copy at this stage than Lockett. Like, I don't know that Lockett's targets really be impacted a huge amount. He runs totally different routes.
So, wait, how many? There were a couple of teams that had three top 24 receivers. I think Dallas?
They'd all be in the top 24 for me for sure. I assume Lockett would fall like to 30 for a lot of people, and I'd start drafting a lot of Tyler Lockett where I'm drafting Juju right now in round six.
Yeah, the Steelers were the other one I was going to mention. Let's see. Dallas. Dallas had Cooper at 15, Lamb at 24. Okay, no, Gallup was 38. So let's see, Pittsburgh. Okay, Pittsburgh had three top 24 receivers. Juju at 16, Deontay and Claypool 21 and 22.
They threw like 700 passes.
They did, yes. And then Carolina did, but that was thanks to Curtis Samuel's rushing. He had 200 yards and two touchdowns rushing. But
I think it would make a ton of sense just because A.J. Brown could still be amazing. Maybe not top five amazing, but still be amazing in this offense. You don't want to see him go to a place like Seattle because of what it could do to everybody there, aside from obviously Russell Wilson.
Jamie was like, not interested. Jamie was just like, stop talking about that, Adam.
Look, I think you got to be encouraged by what Seattle's offseason has been. You know, the start of it with the trade Russell to where they finished out of the NFL draft of, you know, having three draft picks and one of them, their first one, was a wide receiver. You know, that kind of tells you that I think they're going to let this offense be a little bit closer to the Russell side of things as opposed to the running side of things. So you don't want to see that get ruined for Metcalf and Lockett and what that could be. But, you know, like, I wouldn't mind seeing Julio in New England. I mean, it's not good for Julio, but, you know, it's not going to ruin a receiving corps, for example. You know, so I don't want to see that happen for the receivers that we're excited about, that there isn't an opening. Like, Tennessee clearly has an opening. I mean, there's just, you know, targets available with Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith gone.
Yeah.
I think the really interesting, like, on the Seattle side of it, and we kind of have, like, if you just took our shirt colors, I'm noticing now, we're almost like a Seahawks podcast. But the interesting thing is we went into the offseason with this idea that Seattle's pulling back on the passing game. Last year, Russell Wilson was at 34.8 pass attempts per game, which was his career high, but he's had three seasons basically right in that same 34 to 35 attempts per game range. He also has a lot of seasons at or below 30 attempts per game, or close to. So I am feeling far less concerned about Russell Wilson losing a bunch of passing volume.
Mm-hmm. But when you factor in that he threw five more times per game in the first eight games compared to the second eight games, does that matter to you?
No, I mean, no.
Okay.
It doesn't. Okay.
All right, then let's move on. Let's talk about, Aaron Rodgers. GM Brian Gutekunst will not trade Aaron Rodgers this summer, according to The Athletic.
I think Rodgers likes me, just hates the GM because it's hard to say his name.
Yeah, Gutekunst. It's the
they
N.
Goody.
There should be two N's in there, but there is not. Gutekunst, it's really tough.
Let's say the Packers never trade Aaron Rodgers. At what point, what date are we going to start discounting Rodgers for the possibility that he actually sits out a few weeks?
If he doesn't show up by the third preseason game.
Okay. That's the last one, right? So it should be the second one.
Second.
Or the last preseason game, excuse me.
Oh, the
last,
okay.
Yeah, there are only three. Whatever the case may be. I don't know.
One the starters will play in.
Right. Many people believe that the NFL will eventually move to an 18-game schedule, according to Peter King. Okay, let's see how 17 goes first. And Corey Davis has a minor shoulder strain, but it didn't seem like it's completely minor. I don't know. Seeing Dr. James Andrews is never a good thing, and they're optimistic that rest will heal it. But this is definitely something to keep an eye on. Let's hope it doesn't linger for Corey Davis.
He is the number three starter in the rotation, though, so that could be bad.
Yeah.
We're going to be live tonight, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, giving some bold predictions, but mostly just answering your questions. We get a ton of questions throughout the night, and it's a lot of fun. So join me and Heath, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday, and get your questions answered and give us some of your bold predictions. So we'll see you tonight, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. What you have to do is subscribe to the, well, you don't have to do this, but what you should do is subscribe to the channel and turn on the notifications so you'll know exactly when we're live. And we will see you tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday night, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. We'll also see you in our Facebook group. We got a link in the episode description, but come on into our Facebook group. It's a great time to join because now you can talk to all the other people in there with your draft questions and weigh in on some hot topics and things like that. Keeper questions, some Q&As, dynasty values. Join our Facebook group. It's Fantasy Football Today. That's it. Just search that in Facebook or click the link in the episode description. Here we go with Jamie's bold predictions. First one, Jamie, Jalen Hurts, your bold prediction is...
He'll be a top five fantasy quarterback this year. I think you just look at what he showed you in the three-game sample size. I know he started four games. We're going to throw out the fourth game, Adam's favorite game of the 2020 campaign, when he started against the Cowboys, right?
Washington. Washington.
I mean, I'm sorry, when he started against Washington, excuse me. Mm-hmm. The Giants playing the Cowboys. You know, the 16-game pace in those three games was 4,500 passing yards, 27 touchdowns, and 1,200 rushing yards. So he has a chance to, I think Lamar Jackson will probably get there as well with the 17 games, but to be the first 4,000, 1,000 guy. And I don't think he's going to be the first guy to do it, but he's got the potential to do it. And, you know, as we've talked about a lot, and obviously the three bold predictions for me are going to be guys that I've talked a lot about already, but he's not going to be drafted as a top five quarterback. So that's, you know, good in terms of what his draft value will be. His upside could be, you know, with the rushing ability, a 4,800 guy. You know, he's going to be better with the full offseason as the starter, with a better offensive line, with a better receiving core, with the addition of Devontae Smith. And who knows what they get back in return for Zach Ertz if they're able to make a trade. So I just think there's a lot to like about Jalen Hurts based on value and potential and upside. And so he's somebody that I draft a lot of already and will continue to draft a lot of. And I think there's a high ceiling. There's a middle floor. I don't know where the floor exactly lies, but the rushing quarterbacks typically give you a high floor, but I don't want to overvalue him, but I do think there's a good floor, a high ceiling, and just a lot to love about what Jalen Hurts could be this season.
I think it's really interesting looking at Philadelphia's offense. And I still have a lot of questions about what they're exactly going to be. They've kind of been a little bit hidden about how much they're adding in terms of running back or quarterback running plays. I don't think they're going to go the full Baltimore route like they did with Lamar Jackson. We've got Nick Sirianni and Shane Steichen, two guys who were under head coaches who we generally view as the ones dictating the play calling, and Frank Reich and Anthony Lynn. So it will be really interesting that first month of the season to see, like, what is their run pass split? How many design quarterback runs do they have for Hurts? Who is he primarily targeting? There's no question he has top five upside. I was just looking at NFC ADP. He's actually QB 11. And I've got him 10 at quarterback, but really close to everybody from 7 through 10. But he's behind Matthew Stafford in ADP.
I'm looking at that too. That's why the other guys that Hurts is behind, pretty understandable, the types of players that you would expect. The mobile guys at the top. Then you have Herbert, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Stafford 10, and Hurts 11, and then Joe Burrow. And Stafford, Hurts, Burrow, and then Matt Ryan, all within 10 picks of each other. So let me follow up with some questions. First of all, you gave the pace for the three games that he started and finished, but I don't think we should just completely throw out week 17. He threw for 75 yards in three quarters, 72 yards in three quarters. He was awful. He did have two rushing touchdowns in that game. But why shouldn't we factor that in when we look at his pace? Because if you look at his 16-game pace in his four starts, it's down to 3,000. It's still great. It's 3,676 passing yards and 1,100 rushing yards and 24 total touchdowns. But I don't know, Jamie, that because we saw his downside. We saw that he's not by any means a polished passer. And when he faced two good defenses last year, he threw for 167 yards in four quarters and 72 yards in three quarters. When he faced Dallas, definitely bad defense. Arizona certainly wasn't great. Two teams that scored over 30 points against the Eagles, he had to throw a ton. That's when his big numbers came. So I don't think we should just throw out week 17. There are different ways you can parse the four games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he just didn't finish the game. So I'm only going to look at the games that he started and finished. But because we don't know, I mean, he could have thrown for, you know, if that game goes to overtime, for example, you know, he could have had, you know, 200 yards passing by the end of that game and his numbers look dramatically different. I think, you know, you got to take into account the whole picture of it. His receiving core was a joke. His offensive line was a joke. Yeah. You know, so he was working with, you know, spare parts. Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert were both playing injured, you know, in that stretch. And Goddard only played 2.5 of those games of the four that he started. So there's just a lot to look at here. And so, you know, it's not like you change coach, you bring back a couple offensive linemen, you add Devontae Smith, and all of a sudden he's the best passer in the world. But you have to take into now he's the starter in the offseason. Now he's the starter come week one. Now he's played a few games. Now you see what he's capable of. You look at what he did as a college quarterback and what he was able to do in two different systems, going from Alabama to Oklahoma, and how he performed in those two scenarios. And so it's just the whole total package. And again, you know, we're talking bold predictions here. You don't have to draft him as a top five guy. That's the point. Yeah. You know, so I think, you know, when you look at the quarterbacks, because I think the top five are kind of locked in, right? We're talking Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, Kyler, Dak, right? I don't think there's going to be a different top five, different order, but different top five. You know, Deshaun Watson changes that if he plays, and you know he's playing, and he's playing, you know, in a scenario that you feel comfortable with. But maybe there's six. In the next group of guys, he belongs. And I think it's pretty clear that, you know, I think we're all in agreement of that. ADP, early ADP tells us that, you know, the industry, for the most part, is in agreement with that. And if you want to take him as the sixth quarterback, fine. You want to take him as the 11th quarterback, fine. But the potential is what you're looking for. And that's what we always talk about at the quarterback position. So if he improves as a passer, which I think he will, continues to run, which I think he will, there's just a lot to love about Jalen Hurts.
And I think, like, those two bad passing games, it's worth noting that one of them he ran for 106 yards. The other one he ran for 34 yards and two touchdowns in three quarters. So, like, even when he was bad as a passer, he still wasn't killing you for fantasy.
Yeah, I'm not anti-Jalen Hurts. I just, my you know, everybody who listens to the show, you know I'm going to bring up the other side of the coin just to have a thorough conversation. You're right about that, Heath. However, one thing that really jumps out to me is that he only scored 20 fantasy points last year in a 6 point per passing touchdown league was not anything special. It probably wasn't top 12 most weeks. He scored more than 20 only once. So he had a huge game against Arizona, 43 fantasy points. He scored 20, 19, and 15 in the other three games. But you just don't really care that much about that when you look at a rookie quarterback. I mean, Lamar Jackson in his seven starts as a rookie, he was on pace for 2,500 passing yards, almost 1,300 rushing yards, but only 16 total touchdowns. He completed 58% of his passes. That's just not a good quarterback. And then the following year was one of the best seasons we've ever seen from a quarterback.
Right. You don't want to expect that by any stretch.
Yeah.
But it's a very easy comparison because came in on a bad team as a backup, played a few games. Wow. You saw the wow factor.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the hope that carries over to next season. And I think that's what we were saying about Lamar Jackson. Nobody expected him to be the NFL MVP and play like he did. But this is the type of scenario that you hope carries over from small sample size as a rookie, bigger performance as a sophomore.
All right, let's go to our next guy here. It's Terry McLaurin. And what is your bold prediction for Terry McLaurin?
Yeah, I'll be a top five fantasy wide receiver this year. Again, something you've heard me say quite a bit, that I like Terry McLaurin a lot. I like the setup for him. I just think there's a lot to love about him without getting into until you ask me a question or two. But there's a lot to love about Terry McLaurin's situation with Ryan Fitzpatrick now as his quarterback.
Okay, go ahead, Heath.
Yeah, there's no doubt this is bold, but it doesn't feel bold to me because in my projections, I've got him number seven. I think so. I'm right there with Jamie, basically projecting him to where if he plays 17 games, he's going to finish top five. Undoubtedly playing with the best quarterback he's ever played with in an offense that should be more aggressive downfield. And it's really pretty remarkable for a receiver in his first 2 years in the league to earn 227 targets from that caliber of quarterback and still average 9 yards per target, which is absolutely elite. So I think he had a little bit of the breakout last year, and it was kind of like Calvin Ridley. There was some missed time, and for McLaurin, the touchdown rate was bad, but the sky is the limit this year.
The thing I like about him playing with Fitzpatrick is Fitzpatrick, since 2010, has played 8 seasons with at least 9 starts. And that's with the Bills, the Titans, the Texans, the Jets, the Dolphins. So he's the definition of a journeyman quarterback. But again, 8 seasons with at least 9 starts. Over that span, his number one receiver has been Stevie Johnson 3 times, Kendall Wright once, Andre Johnson once, Brandon Marshall twice, and Devontae Parker once. Those guys have gotten 128 targets on the year in those 9 starts. So when he started in the 8 seasons where he's made at least 9 starts, his number one receiver has gotten at least 128 targets. Does that make sense?
At least 128.
At least 128 targets.
Mm-hmm.
So again, 8 seasons, 7 times in those 8 seasons, the number one receiver has at least 72 catches. 6 times the number one receiver had at least 1,000 yards. And 3 times the number one receiver had at least 10 touchdowns.
Well, that's so big right there. Because the other ones are good, like the targets and the yards, but they're not top five good.
No, not top five good.
But the touchdowns, I mean, if it's only three times, but McLaurin has 11 touchdowns.
Did you hear the names that Jamie said? Like, Terry McLaurin's a better player than most of those guys, too.
Right. Everybody but Andre Johnson and Brandon Marshall, at least on paper right now, he's better than when Ryan Fitzpatrick got them.
Stevie Johnson was pretty damn good.
Right. But I'm saying when Ryan Fitzpatrick got to them, they weren't as good as where Terry McLaurin is right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
I mean, like, the easy one to point to is Devontae Parker, who was a total disaster until Fitzpatrick got a chance to just target him, give him a chance to play at what he does best, and give him a chance to make plays. The thing that Ryan Fitzpatrick does well is he lets his receivers make plays. He lets them go up and make contested catches. He makes them, you know, he allows them to get plays in space. He anticipates throws, sometimes to a fault. We know that's been a problem for him, which is why he's been with so many teams. But they're going to allow him to make plays, and I think it's going to really benefit a player like Terry McLaurin.
And I just want to, like, no disrespect meant to Stevie Johnson in any way, shape, or form, but he never had as many yards in a season as Terry McLaurin had last year, and he was about 25% worse on a per-target basis than McLaurin's been in his first 2 years of his career. So
it's also a different NFL. I mean, you know, the NFL changed since Stevie Johnson and Ryan Fitzpatrick played together. A lot of these numbers, like the high-end guys, Marshall in 2015 with Fitzpatrick is a high-end guy. Devontae Parker 2 years ago is more on the high, in terms of the numbers. The 72 and 1,000 is more the Stevie Johnson, Kendall Wright numbers. But, you know, when you just start to look at it, you say, okay, where's the targets? You know, where's the floor? The 128 targets, that's a good season for a wide receiver over 16 games. I think we're going to see Terry McLaurin in the 150 target range. The only concern I really have, to be honest with you, is how good will Curtis Samuel be in terms of what he does as a receiver? We know, like you said, Adam, in talking about his performance in Carolina, he was a do-it-all type of guy, can, you know, play running back, take, you know, bubble screens and jet sweeps and all those things. I hope that's still kind of what he does with Washington. But if he does more as a wide receiver, that's going to take away from McLaurin. And everything you're hearing about Dyami Brown, again, I apologize if I'm butchering his name. Yeah, you can correct me at some point, Adam. You're hearing just wonderful things about that. And then you factor in Logan Thomas, you factor in the running backs and what they're going to do. Is McLaurin going to get peppered as much as I hope he will? I'm still buying into it, but you know, those other guys could take away from McLaurin enough that he doesn't finish even as a top 10 guy, which he could still be top 15 and be fantastic. You just don't want to, again, overvalue him on draft day, which I don't think you have to.
Yeah. I don't, the only issue I guess I have with this bold prediction is who are you expecting him to be ahead of? You know, it just, is he really going to be top five when you've got players on better offenses, maybe players who are kind of lined up to catch more touchdowns than he will? Ryan Fitzpatrick only has one season with more than 24 touchdown passes. He only has three seasons where he started all 16 games. And that's the other thing. Is he going to lose his job? He has a tendency to lose his job because he is so turnover prone. And this is a team that's got a great defense. Don't put the defense at a disadvantage by being turnover prone. I don't know that he's going to lose his job to Taylor Heinicke or something like that, but it's just hard to crack the top five. I mean, you've got him ranked ahead of non-PPR. I'm looking, I'll switch to PPR. But like, you've got him ranked ahead of Calvin Ridley, I believe.
Same.
With Julio on the roster.
okay, in PPR, McLaurin's a little lower. You have him ninth. And Heath, you have him seventh.
I've got him ahead of Michael Thomas, Justin Jefferson, DK Metcalf, Allen Robinson.
Why would you? So why would you put him ahead of Justin Jefferson?
A lot of what Jefferson did last year, like, we know that we've talked about the regression that's coming for him. I just don't think Justin Jefferson's going to be as good as he was in his rookie year.
But he was so much better than Terry McLaurin, both as a rookie and sophomore McLaurin.
He was. I don't think a lot of what he did last year is sustainable, and I think that Washington's probably going to throw it 120 more times than the Vikings this year.
Washington was more pass heavy last year than you would have thought. And then bring
the year before, that same coaching staff was, I think, the most pass heavy offense in the league.
Right. And Scott Turner likes to throw it.
Scott Turner definitely likes to throw the ball.
I do think it is Dyami Brown, but I will try to check on that. Okay. Yeah. McLaurin, it's just hard to find a reason not to like him. Can he make big plays? Yeah. He's got four touchdowns in his career of more than 50 yards. Two of them were on deep balls. Two of them were on kind of catch and run, broken tackle types of plays. He had a very high ADOT as a rookie. He had a pretty low ADOT last year because they didn't throw the ball downfield, but he's shown some versatility. And really, if you look at the overall numbers, he was about 20th per game at wide receiver. It's not great, but his last four games were terrible. He had 155 yards in his last four games. Before that, and remember, they had Heinicke in there. I think they had Haskins. Haskins played in two of those games. He started one. Before that, he was on pace for 1,400 yards. So it was just kind of a sour finish to what was a terrific year for McLaurin. And it's hard. It's just hard not to like him. Okay, TJ Hockenson is our next bold prediction subject here, Jamie. What do we got on TJ Hockenson? I know this one. I don't know Heath is going to go along with quite as much. Go ahead.
That'll be a top three tight end this season. And again, you know, these are three guys I've talked a lot about. Hockenson, we've spent a lot of time talking about, but I just love the setup for him. I think there's a lot to like about him. And you know, you're going to say this about Heath, and I'm going to defend Heath on this one before he trashes my bold prediction. But he likes TJ Hockenson. This isn't a – we all like TJ Hockenson. We all like TJ Hockenson. And it's like whenever we have these conversations, it always comes across as one of us doesn't like the player because you take the other side of it. So I want to make that clear. I know Heath likes TJ Hockenson. And when we get to his bold predictions, when we talk about Mark Andrews, I like Mark Andrews. These are the two guys that we're going to compare always because the top three is going to be locked in. And I don't know who Hockenson is going to knock out of the top three if he gets into the top three. I hope it's not that he knocks out anybody and he finishes fourth because that's where I have him ranked. But I just think there's a huge ceiling coming for him, huge season coming for him because he has a huge ceiling. And so I just like the setup for him with the lack of talent around him and the start that he's shown you over the first two seasons.
Heath, so the bold prediction is that Hockenson will finish top three.
Yeah, like I can this is easier for me to get behind than when we have the Mark Andrews versus TJ Hockenson, because like Jamie said earlier, this is bold predictions. It's absolutely TJ Hockenson could have a top three season. He's still just 24 years old, or will be 24 at the start of season. He's still just 23. There's no reason to think that just because he's been inefficient his first 2 years in the league, that will continue forever. His competition for targets, I mean, besides number one wide receiver DeAndre Swift and number two wide receiver Jamal Williams, is almost non-existent. They don't have any wide receivers who really probably even profile as a number two option, much less a number one option. So the opportunity is all there. Now, yes, I think there's concerns about the fact that he's not really been very good on a per target or per game or per reception basis yet in his career. I think there's concerns that he's got a quarterback downgrade, but in full PPR, like there's a chance that he comes out and is just like right there with Kelsey and Kittle in terms of his target share. And then we won't care if he's inefficient. He's going to be awesome for fantasy anyway.
It's another guy who had a really bad finish to the season. He had 43, 18, 23, and 25 yards in his last four games. But for a while, I just remember doing the starter sit episodes, and you just started TJ Hockenson. You know, he was in the 60-yard range most weeks and getting enough catches.
Last season, he had 11 games with at least five targets. And he scored 13 PPR points, at least 13 PPR points in seven of them. So it didn't take a lot of targets for him to be successful. And like he said, I think you're going to see him lead the team in targets. You know, those are the type of tight ends that we look for. I know Heath didn't say he was with the running backs, but he has the chance to lead this team in targets. And, you know, you look back, we've said this, you know, how many times over the last, you know, several months that George Kittle with the 49ers, Darren Waller with the Raiders, Mark Andrews, you know, in Lamar Jackson's big season, Zach Ertz in Carson Wentz's big seasons. Those guys lead their team in targets or right there, you know, at the top. And obviously Travis Kelce, you know what he does. So I think Hockenson has that type of ability. You've seen, and we talked about this with Jacob Gibbs, when Jared Goff leaned on his tight ends and it was the end of the 2019 campaign. And in terms of routes run between Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee, when they actually ran routes, that's where he was looking more times than not. Mm-hmm. And so Goff has shown you an ability to make a tight end elite in a stretch of games. And this receiving core speaks to leaning on their tight end. This coaching staff speaks to probably leaning on their tight ends because Anthony Lynn has a history of doing that as well. So I just think there's a lot to like about where TJ Hockenson can, what TJ Hockenson can be this year, who he can be this year, and the type of fantasy option he can be this year. So he's somebody that I'm also aggressively targeting in drafts that I'm not in with Adam.
Like it's possible that he just finishes number three in like a Logan Thomas way from last year as well. Like if the efficiency doesn't improve, you just get enough targets to where it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hope it's not because George Kittle misses, you know, half the season, because that was a big part of it also. On a per-game basis, George Kittle was a top three tight end. So, you know, you want to see, and this would make the position great, you want to see Andrews playing great, Hockenson playing great, the top three staying healthy and playing great, and then, you know, two or three other guys, Kyle Pitts, Dallas Goedert, you know, those type of players, and maybe a surprise or two like we got last year with Thomas and Tanyan. You know, all of these guys being fantastic, and then we could say maybe this was the year of the tight end. So I'd love to see that be the case. Noah Fant as well.
I think the problem that I have with tight end is when you have a late pick in a 12-team league, if you can't get Kelce, I don't know when to take a tight end, because it seems if I have, let's say, the 10th pick, my first or second round pick to me feels too early for Waller and Kittle. My third round pick feels, and my third round pick definitely too early for Andrews, and I wouldn't take Andrews in round four there. I don't think I'm going to get Andrews in round five. So that's 58th overall. So is that round 5-6 turn, is that where you're taking Hockenson? You know, right now I'm looking at his ADP on NFC. It's Andrews. So Andrews actually is there. He's not there in our draft, but he's 65th. Kyle Pitts is also 65th, and Hockenson is 69th. So look, if you can get to the end of round five or the beginning of round six, and you've got your choice of Andrews, Pitts, and Hockenson, and Goddard's actually going 91st, you know, that's pretty interesting. But you really can't wait any longer than that. You cannot wait until round seven if you have a late pick to think that you're going to get one of those top seven tight ends. And then, yeah, you're passing up some pretty good players, especially if you don't have a quarterback. You're passing up some pretty good players around 60th overall. So I've been taking Hockenson there. I don't love it, but I know Jamie seems to really like it a lot, at least. Yeah, so it's just you have to pull the trigger at that point.
Listen, with Goddard, current average draft position, if that's the case, I will probably move both Andrews and Hockenson down a little bit from where I have them. Because if I have the choice to just wait until round eight and take Dallas Goedert, I don't know. Like, he has this type of breakout potential as well. So if I can get him two rounds later, I'll take good running backs and wide receivers in the round five and six range.
Do you want to hear
And you like Noah Fant also, right? So he's in that range too.
Want to hear my tight end bold prediction that I'm not at all committed to, but we'll throw it out there for some fun food for thought.
I think I know what it is.
Go ahead.
Is it that Noah Fant will be better than TJ Hockenson?
No, it's that George Kittle is going to be the biggest bust in fantasy.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. First of all, he's injury prone and he plays in an injury prone style. Okay, I don't find it to be all that fluky. He's extremely physical and I love him. And he's the best tight end in football, but he's Gronk-like in that respect. Well, he's the best all-around tight end in football, I think. Fine. He might be the second best, but I think he's the best.
No, I think a lot of people would agree with you because of what he does as a blocker.
Right. But what he does as a blocker leaves him a little vulnerable to injury. And you've got possibly a early season switch to Trey Lance, which I don't think will be good for the overall passing game. And Brandon Ayuk was sick last year. I know that when Ayuk, Debo, and Kittle were all playing, all healthy, Kittle dominated targets. But just because it happened last year doesn't mean it will happen this year. And this is the most target competition that he's had. So I love him as a player. Haven't drafted him in any of our mocks yet. And get a bust feel from him.
I don't think he's a bust, but a lot of what you said is why he's third for me behind Waller.
Yeah. And look at the ADP.
I can't rank him behind Hockenson or Andrews, but yeah. I don't feel bust-ish potential from him, but I don't feel same ceiling potential for him.
He's eight picks after Waller. Kelce's eighth, Waller's 22nd, and Kittle's 30th. That's a pretty big gap.
Kittle at 30 is great.
That's what you should do.
Kittle at 30 is great. I would take him there. I just don't want to take him in the second round.
You would take the biggest bust in fantasy.
Well, I could be. You know, actually, it's a good point. Like, if I'm deciding between McLaurin and Kittle, there's some wide receiver. I don't know that I'd take him over, say, Chris Carson. If you get to that tier of running backs, I'd go Kittle. But if Julio Jones or DK Metcalf or McLaurin are sitting there in the middle of round three,
Mahomes or Kittle?
I think I go Mahomes.
Yeah.
How about you?
I go back and forth. I think I have I have Mahomes higher in non-PPR, and full PPR might be Kittle, but it's really close.
I would take Kittle in both.
All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about some news items and whether or not they matter or if it's just some off-season fodder. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today. What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back, everybody, to the first Bold Prediction show of the week. We are recording for this week, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Heath is up tomorrow, so get excited for that. And he's got a Mark Andrews Bold Prediction. We'll keep talking tight ends. All right, so does this matter? Joe Burrow, he threw the ball deep. I mean, he had 8.5 intended air yards per pass attempt. That was basically tied with guys like Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, which surprised me, Josh Allen, Matt Ryan, Baker Mayfield. It was a lot more than Justin Herbert, who has this deep ball reputation. But it's not that he's working on throwing the ball deep more often. He's working on his deep ball accuracy, Joe Burrow. Heath, does that matter, Joe Burrow working on his deep ball accuracy?
I hope that he is. He needs to improve as a passer in his second year. And I have a little concern that the injury will prevent him from making the leap that we would normally expect from a player of his caliber. But no, I mean, it will matter if he gets better at it.
And who would it matter for, do you think? Higgins or Chase? Or would it just hurt Tyler Boyd or just not really make a difference?
I think it'd be good for the wide receivers, Higgins and Chase, more than Boyd.
Okay.
It helps when you have, you know, more speed. And AJ Green is not a speed guy anymore. And so, you know, I love the upside of Joe Burrow. I just think there's, you know, I mean, Heath is certainly, you know, right in what the injury impact will be. But, you know, you got to hope that as we've seen, as things have gone on, guys have come back from ACLs. And I know it's the ACL and the MCL, so it's a little bit more challenging, but have come back and not missed a beat, especially that position. I just think there's, the sky's the limit for what he could be this year with, you know, if Jamar Chase is as good as advertised, could be the best receiving core in football if all these guys play to their strengths.
But you're taking Jalen Hurts over Burrow?
Yeah, because they're running, you know, but Burrow's right there. You know, I again, going back to that group of quarterbacks, 6 through 12, he's, for me, Burrow's in that conversation.
Okay, Larry Holder of The Athletic thinks the Saints could be more run heavy early in the 2021 season. Jamie, does this matter?
Well, certainly it matters for people that are concerned about Alvin Kamara and what Kamara's numbers look like when there was no Drew Brees, especially from a passing game standpoint, you know, so it'd be nice to see Kamara get a little bit more rushing opportunities and have a chance to score 6 touchdowns every game like he did, you know, at the end of the season. It certainly matters for Latavius Murray, you know, and I think one thing we don't spend enough time talking about is these second, not even second tier running backs, like third tier running backs, fourth tier running backs, guys that you can get, you know, around in rounds 8 through 12 that could potentially be difference makers, whether due to injury or even in some secondary situations. We've talked a little bit about Jamal Williams, what he could be. Latavius Murray needs to be in that conversation. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be guys that are like league winners, because we know Latavius Murray would be a league winner if Kamara goes down. Tony Pollard would be a league winner if, you know, Ezekiel Elliott goes down. But Murray's going to have some standalone value, you know, and we've seen it, you know, at times during his tenure with the Saints that when things are going well for them, it wasn't the same as Kamara and Mark Ingram. But, you know, if they are going to go back to running the ball a little bit more, a little bit better, taking some pressure off their quarterback and maybe more Jameis and less Taysom, Murray's going to be just a fantastic value and somebody that you can use as a flex at times during the season.
Yeah, I thought this was Larry Holder's way of sneakily saying that he thinks that Taysom Hill is going to start week one at quarterback, because they will be more run heavy if Taysom Hill's playing quarterback.
I think I said that they'll be more run heavy. I think the way, at least on RotoWorld, that it was written was like they're going to rely more on Kamara and Murray. So that's my fault for being deceived.
I think rely on their running backs, not their running game.
Okay. The Giants could limit Saquon Barkley's snaps early in the season, according to ESPN's Jordan Renan.
I do not like this at all.
Green eggs and ham.
I was a little skittish about Saquon anyway, with adding Kenny Golladay to the offense and not being a little bit unsure about his target share and then coming back from the injury. I think I had him fifth or sixth. I have a hard time saying that I definitely want him over Mixon or Zeke or Eckler in PPR. In fact, I think I might prefer those guys.
I can see it. I just think if he's healthy, he's a monster. He's just an absolute monster. He may not catch, you know, 60 passes or whatever he did as a rookie. Was he 80 passes as a rookie?
Yeah, I think so.
He's not going to do that with Daniel Jones moving, you know, because Eli was a statue. But he's got 50 catch potential. He's still got, you know, 2,000 yard potential in the 17 game season. You know, he's still a star to me. I'm not going to shy away from drafting Barkley if he's healthy.
Where do you have him?
I think I have him fourth behind McCaffrey, Cook, and Kamara.
I would expect Jonathan Taylor is going to move ahead of him.
For you?
Well, I think at ADP, I think Taylor is sixth right now.
Oh.
Interesting. He actually had 91 catches as a rookie, but yeah, those days are done. In fact, I've pointed this out many times, they had a bye right in the middle of that season, and after the bye, that trend stopped. He was like Matt Forte in the first eight games, and then he was more like a 65 catch running back after that, I think. Yeah, so Taylor...
Matt Forte, he was Christian McCaffrey.
I guess so. Yeah, right now it's McCaffrey, Cook, Kamara, Derrick Henry, Barkley, Taylor.
If he plays 17 games, there's no way he's under 50 catches. No way.
Yeah, no, definitely not. ESPN's John Keim says the Washington football team wants Antonio Gibson to run more pass routes in 2021. He did have 36 catches in 14 games, but it really felt like more than that because he had three catches in his first two games, Gibson, and then three or more catches in eight of his last 11 healthy games. So he was more involved. Like 36 catches in 14 games doesn't really jump off the page, but he was much more involved in that as the season went on. He had one game where he left after four snaps, didn't have a catch. McKissick, though, had 80 catches in 16 games. Heath, does this matter that they want to throw the ball downfield more and they want Gibson in more pass routes?
Those two things don't seem to really go together, do they?
Unless he's running deeper routes. And the guy is... You know, kind of a hybrid player, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's bad for McKissick, I would say.
I think the downfield thing sounds really great if you want to take De'Ami Brown in the last round of a draft as a sleeper. Unless they're just going to phase J.D. McKissick out of the offense, which might not be a bad idea, it's hard to see how the addition of Curtis Samuel and the addition of Ryan Fitzpatrick and the wanting to throw the ball downfield more leads to Antonio Gibson being more involved in the passing game.
Okay.
I just think that this guy, for what he accomplished last year, changing positions with no offseason, with the different quarterbacks that they went through, the fact that he got hurt, came back, was still their, you know, primary running back, the ceiling is amazing for what he could be, you know, because now that he learns the position, gets better in pass protection, on the field more, I think you said it best. Phase JD McKissic out of the offense because he was very good and he helped a lot of people win fantasy games, but he's an Alex Smith guy. This is not a Ryan Fitzpatrick guy. You know, he doesn't need I'm under duress and panic type of running back to play with him. He needs a star, and Antonio Gibson's a star.
All right, two more things real quick here. Tim Tebow.
This is another 50-catch guy, easy.
Tim Tebow could be used like Taysom Hill, according to ESPN's Diana Rossini. Jamie, does this matter? Tim Tebow like Taysom Hill?
Oh, boy. I mean, it matters. And it matters for Trevor Lawrence, if that's going to be the case. It matters for Travis Etienne. It matters for James Robinson. I still find it hard to believe. And look, I'm as big a Tebow fan as you'll find for what he did for my college program. Me and Pete Prisco, we were presidents of the Tim Tebow fan club. If he does play in this role, he has fantasy value. If that's the case, you know, deeper two quarterback leagues, you'll be interested in Tim Tebow if he's going to get listed as a quarterback.
So when I see a report that says he's going to be used like Taysom Hill, I interpret that as he's in competition for the starting quarterback job. Is that not?
That's probably fair. I can't see him making the team.
Yeah, I know. No. All right, so let's just move to our last one, Heath. Tennessee tight end Anthony Firkser, very involved in the passing game during OTAs, and that's according to the team website. The most involved. And yeah, there's obviously a lot of targets to be had there. So Anthony Firkser, good sleeper?
He is a good sleeper. As their roster is currently constructed, he's going to have to be very involved unless A.J. Brown's just going to get 200 targets, which I think everybody would be okay with. They did a lot. Like, he was frustrating last year to the Jonnu Smith fantasy manager because they like running those two and three tight end sets and just throwing to any of them. I still don't know that I believe that he's going to be more than a 60 or 70 target guy, but maybe he will.
Who is the guy last year? And I'm not talking about performance, so stats don't matter, but that's the level down from Logan Thomas and Robert Tonyan. Like, is there a guy that you could think of that, oh, this guy was useful for fantasy?
It's Jimmy Graham, right?
Noah Fant.
I'm thinking more like came out of nowhere type of guy.
Yeah, Graham, first half of the season.
Eric Ebron had a stretch like that.
Like, I think Firkser, I don't think he's going to be what Logan Thomas and Robert Tonyan was. I don't think he's catching 10 touchdowns on 59 targets like Tonyan did. I don't think he's catching as many passes as Logan Thomas did. But he's that type of guy. He's going to be that type of guy that you say, we're talking about him now, right? You know, we're going to talk about him a few times. I think he's a great Scott Fishbowl tight end. I think he's a great best ball tight end. I think he's a great, you know, tight end premium tight end to put on your bench or as your second option, because all the targets are there. But even in regular seasonal PPR, non-PPR, whatever format you play in, he's going to be a guy we talk about on the waiver wire a lot.
I mean, the guy might have been Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, but Jonnu Smith was, Dave overhyped Jonnu Smith. You know, Jonnu Smith got a lot of attention in the preseason.
A lot of people overhyped Jonnu Smith, it turns out. I'm so embarrassed for tight end. What a pathetic season for tight end. Let's just quick exercise. Robert Tonyan was the number three tight end in PPR with 177 points. How many wide receivers? Oh, that would have made him wide receiver 37. He scored one more point than Russell Gage. Embarrassing, stupid position.
You need to do it on a per game basis, though. It's not quite that bad.
Well, it was Tonyan, right? What, did he miss games?
No, I'm saying that he was like sixth on a per game
basis.
Okay,
all right. So then let's take, he was fifth, 11.8. And how many wide receivers got there? That's even worse, 43rd. Yeah, DJ Chark. Okay, guys, let's read some emails. FantasyFootball@CBSI.com. This is from Jake. Grade the trade. It's a dynasty startup draft. Trade 1.8. And this is, remember, not just a rookie draft, dynasty startup, everybody. 1.8 and 10.5 for 211, 7.2, and a 2022 first and a 2023 first and second. So you're moving down from 1.8 to 211. That's a big drop, but you're getting...
Is it snake or non-snake?
I'm assuming it's snake.
I'm assuming it's Snake. I'm fine if you want to do this, but don't draft any old players if you're going to do this. Like, if you're making this move, then you're planning on being better in 2022 and 2023 than you are now, in my opinion. So draft young guys.
So 1.8 is probably, it's a one QB league?
I don't know.
So they didn't indicate, so assume one QB league. So one QB league, 1.8, and a startup dynasty league is, I mean, is that like Derrick Henry range?
I've got Justin Jefferson there.
Okay.
Could so be Cam Akers.
Okay, wait, I'm going to look at our startup dynasty draft right now. This was non-PPR, but.
The one you butchered the draft?
No, I think this is the one that I didn't butcher the draft. The Superflex one is the one I butchered. Wow, that was like the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Come on.
Yeah, it's probably not true, right? Well, now I can't find the draft results. Okay, so anyway, let's read our next email. You're doing the this trade?
I would make the trade.
Okay. Okay, this is from Cool Sports Guy. I thought I was the only one. If you guys can't get a top three tight end, what are you going to do?
If there ever was an email, we answered already.
Well, I talked about it, but what are you guys going to do? If you can't get a top three?
I mean, for me, I play the board. I'll be aggressive with Hockenson because I like him a lot, but I'm not going to be aggressive with the guys around him. So I'm not going to target Andrews. I'm not going to target Pitts. For me, it's Hockenson, Goddard, and then just wait it out and then just kind of take. I'd say it's Hockenson, Goddard, Irv Smith. Those are the three that I target in their various ranges. So Hockenson in the first six rounds, more like rounds 5 and 6. Goddard more like rounds 8 and 9, and then Smith more like round 10.
And Heath?
Not that far. Like, I'd go around earlier for Andrews. I'm fine with him in round 4. Hockenson in round 5, 6. Goddard, Fant. And Pitts, I'm all fine with in round 7. Obviously, Pitts is going to be gone in like round 3 now, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see where his ADP is if Julio's traded.
Dynasty League startup mock draft from a week or two ago. Pick 8 was DK Metcalf, in between Derrick Henry and Tyreek Hill and Justin Jefferson. And the round 2 pick 11 was Austin Eckler. It was Joe Mixon, Eckler, Aaron Jones, and then J.K. Dobbins.
And the thing is, it's so difficult. It depends on what group of people you have together. Because there's some rounds where you're going to see a whole bunch of running backs go in the first round, and then it's all wide receivers in round 2. But I think that type of drop-off, like you're getting 2 firsts and a second to go down from DK to Eckler.
Yeah,
I would suggest you shouldn't take Eckler there if you're doing that.
You take Dobbins.
Yeah.
Right? Is that?
You also have 2.8 though, still.
What'd you say?
He also has
2.8, yeah.
Or no, not 2.8, because it's Snake. So
right, no, he would have 2.5.
Right.
I hate doing that on the spot. Okay, this is from Kyle. 12-team PPR draft, 2 running backs, and 3 flexes. I have the 12th and 13th picks. It's PPR. I'm leaning Cam Akers and Najee Harris. Is this a good decision, taking them over guys like Eckler, A.J. Brown, Diggs, Mixon, Jonathan Taylor?
Nope.
No, I'd much rather have Eckler.
And Taylor, right?
And Taylor, yeah.
Okay.
Those aren't bad picks, but you're passing up some pretty good players as well, in my opinion, better players.
I feel like you can make a better argument for Akers there than you can Harris, but I just wouldn't, those would not be my picks.
Agreed.
So it's PPR and it's 2 running backs and 3 flex spots. Does that change anything in terms of I would really like to get at least 1 wide receiver here?
No.
Okay.
It's interesting the way he said it. 2 running backs, 3 flexes. We don't know how many wide receivers you start.
That's true.
Right. It could be 2, 2, and 3.
How many emails have I read? 4? I did the grade the trade. I did the tight ends. I did the
startup dynasty.
I think I've only done 3. I'm missing an email here. This is from Dave in Flint. I have an 8-team half PPR league, and one team is trying to get DeAndre Swift from me. I'm a Lions fan. Swift is my family favorite. My son picked his jersey number for his junior football jersey this year, so I hate to trade him. However, this man is now offering me a first and a second in the 2022 rookie draft in the 2022 rookie drafts for DeAndre Swift. At which point should I just say to heck with it and take the trade?
Not
first,
this
and a second for Swift for next year.
Rookie drafts, first and second in 2022 for Swift.
And nothing this year?
No, nothing.
That's not enough for me.
It's so hard to say because, like, he should be awesome. And if he's awesome, then it's not enough. But if he busts, then you're going to, why didn't I take the trade?
Let me just, I forgot. I mentioned this, but it probably was lost in the shuffle. It's an eight-team league. So that second round pick in the rookie draft is a little bit better.
I think if, especially in an eight-team league, depending on how many players you roster, I want to get something back in return this year. Something that can help me this year too. So like I want a player plus those two picks or a pick this year as well.
Also, like when you're, and this is just to everybody that is sending those types of trades. And like, if you could tell us if the team you're trading with is like awful or really good or in the middle, there's a big difference between the first or second pick and the seventh or eighth pick. And in 12-team leagues, the difference is much, much bigger. Like, if you told me it was number one overall and number nine overall, that's a much different discussion for DeAndre Swift than the projected number six or seven overall.
Yeah, but he wouldn't know that anyway, though.
Well, so. you can know if they – like, I think you can generally put them in groups.
Top
like,
three.
This guy's roster sucks.
Right.
This
but he's not going to have any idea if it's one, you know. So.
Right, no.
But I think if he really wants DeAndre Swift that badly – either if you've had your rookie draft already, look who he took in the first round and make that part of it with just a pick next year, or somebody on his roster that could help you this season. Because eight teams, he should have somebody good, or she should have somebody good.
Okay, last email here is from Kevin. I'm in the second year of being the commissioner of my league that has been running for 20 years. I'm trying to keep up with the times with this stupid added game. Hey, come on. It's more football. We currently play 14 weeks. Three division winners and one wild card make the playoffs. My question is, what would you guys do and what are the settings going to allow us to do? Should we just extend our season a little longer? My thought was to give the three division winners a bye in week 15 and have the fourth and fifth seed play week 15 to see who joins the three division winners. And the playoffs will continue in week 16 and 17 to find a winner. Or would you guys play an additional regular 15th week and play playoffs week 16 and 17? Or would you just leave it alone and not do anything? What do you think?
The second option for sure.
Yep.
I kind of like that idea, though, of the play-in game. I liked it in the NBA. I think that's cool. You give the three division winners a bye, and then you have seeds 4 and 5 play in. I think I support either one of those options. Put it up to a vote in your league.
Wait, you're eliminating a playoff team though, right?
No, he only has four playoff teams to begin with.
I would just play the 15, especially when you only have four playoff teams. I would like for everybody to get an additional regular season game to try to determine who gets those four spots.
This is a 12-team league?
I don't know.
Well, the 12-team league should have six playoff teams.
I agree, but this league only has four, and they've been doing it for 20 years, so
that's probably not changing that.
It's the way they rock and roll here.
Yeah, if it's I guess I didn't hear the first part of that. So if it's only four teams getting in the playoffs, then I would go to option one. I like that, the playing game.
Playing game. Now, how about this?
I would like more teams to have a chance to make a run.
Right. So here's what you should do. I'm sure we'll all agree on this. Three division winners get the bye. In week 15, every other team plays, and the highest score gets the wild card.
I like that, too.
I don't like that.
No, that's a little extreme to give like a last place team the opportunity, but you could expand it. You could do the next four teams. You could do whatever you want, but have fun with it.
I thought you were going to say something to the effect of the three division winners get a bye. Then every other team, you take out their worst week and their best week. And so you call it the Azerstat playoff.
No, you have to only take out the weeks where one of their three best players left with an injury and played less than 50% of the snaps.
Oh, you really want to complicate it. Okay, yeah. I was going to take out their highest score and their lowest score and then take the average score of every other game.
It's perfect. The Azer playoffs, the Azer play-in schedule. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for the emails. More bold predictions later in the week, and we'll see you tonight.
YouTube.com/fantasyfootballtoday at 7 p.m. Eastern. See ya.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.